They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Shu Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
This is On The Commons with your host, Shu Bartholomew. On The Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on The Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew, and on The Commons with us today we have Frank. And Frank, today we're celebrating. Pop the champagne.
We are indeed, Shu. Happy birthday to you and to On The Commons.
Today we start our ninth year. We've done 8 years of On The Commons, and we're just going to keep going, aren't we?
Certainly are.
We're going to start off this year by talking a little bit about some changes that are starting actually in Virginia, but if CAI had its way, it would go all over the country because they think this is pretty nifty, and we don't.
Well, it is pretty nifty if you're a CAI shoe. It's just too nifty if you live in one of these associations, as we'll discuss.
So, 516, you and I went down. We've talked about it before. You and I went down, and we testified against it. We tried to prevent it from being enacted. We tried to point out all the bad parts for the homeowners in there. And we got one change through. But it's become the law, and what now, Frank?
Well, the next thing that's going to happen is that Governor Kane is going to appoint the 11 members of this Common Interest Community Board that will wield an awful lot of power and an awful lot of influence over homeowners associations in Virginia. And the reason it's 11-member board instead of a 9-member board is that Shu and I were able to get a requirement that two people on the board actually live in associations. And, of course, the special interests weren't ready to give up any of the other 9 seats. So they added 2 seats just for people who live in these associations. And I'm absolutely sure that they will be quick to nominate 2 lobotomy survivors to represent the homeowners, but we'll have to see whether the governor actually appoints those characters.
I don't know, but that's going to be coming up later on this month. I called the Commonwealth of Virginia and was told that they were vetting some people, some applicants. Why do we have any idea why this bill came about, Frank? I mean, do we need it?
Well, We had heard about 2 years back that CAI was planning something very big, but they kept it very, very close to the vest. There was no public announcement. There was no public discussion before the legislation was actually introduced. It was put forward by an entity in Richmond called the Virginia Housing Commission, and I recommend that you go to the website of the Virginia Housing Commission, you look up who's on the commission, you Google them, and then you look at something called the Virginia Public Access Program, VPAP, and you can find out who has made donations to who, and you'll find a whole plethora of information about the people on this commission being representative of the various special interest groups involved with homeowners associations, whether it be CAI, the developers, the realtors, the law firms, etc. And then you just look up to whom those folks made their political contributions. And all of a sudden, the picture begins to become pretty clear as to what's going on with the Virginia Housing Commission and whose interests that commission really represents. And it was very disappointing for me to go through that process.
Well, the Virginia Housing Commission, I've got to say it at this point, I had signed up to be notified of their meetings. And when I didn't get any notices, I called down. I mean, this has been going on over the years, Frank. And when I didn't get any notices, I called down to find out what was going on. And I was told, oh, well, the commission hasn't been meeting. There have been no meetings. There's nothing going on. Well, come to find out that they not only have been meeting, but they've been coming up with all kinds of diabolical ideas and things that they want to have done. When we went down to Richmond and we testified, Terry Suit, who's the sponsor of the bill that eventually became this law, came up to me and said, but this came through the Housing Commission. And I said, but, you know, I've been, she's on the commission if not the chair. And she says, oh, that. She says, no, that commission, when I told her that I hadn't been receiving notices of the meetings, she said, that commission was disbanded a long time ago. And you heard that.
Yes.
And then you found notice of an upcoming meeting, no agenda, of course, notice of an upcoming meeting. So I sent her an email and I said, is this the committee that you told me had been disbanded years ago? And all of a sudden, it's please call Elizabeth Palin to find out what's going on. I mean, how can anybody? She knew that. I mean, she just flat out and out lied, Frank.
Well, the folks in Virginia who want to find out what's really going on should go, first of all, to a website called RichmondSunlight.com. That tracks all of the pieces of legislation that came through the last legislative session. And that's got a link right to VPAP, so that when you find out who introduced a piece of legislation, you can find out who their contributors are. And when I did that with regard to Terry Suit, I found out that the common interest, what do they call themselves, the Community Association Management Group, they're a subgroup of CAI. They're all CAI members. But they basically put this piece of legislation together, and they hired a former member of the House of Delegates, Jack Rust, to be the drafter of the legislation for them. He stood up in Richmond and announced that he had been the drafter of this legislation. And the group that hired him made a $7,000 contribution to Terry Suit, as published on VPAP. She also got donations from various management companies and from at least one CAI-affiliated attorney who's also heavily involved in the Virginia Housing Commission and the Common Interest Community Study Group that cranked out this this legislation. If you look up House Bill 516, when you get to the RichmondSunlight.com website, you can find the discussion that's been published on Richmond Sunlight about House Bill 516, and a lot of this information is out there in the discussion, identifying people by name.
I think that there were three entities who claim to have initiated this bill, requests for this bill. The other one is the Virginia Association of Realtors. They actually held some kind of a virtual class for the members. Shall we play a short clip?
We should.
And see what see what they had to say about it. Listen carefully. This is from the Virginia Association of Realtors.
Hello, I'm Lynn Marshall. Welcome to this webcast on recent statutory changes to the Property Owners Association Act. We're here to discuss exactly what the General Assembly has done at the urging of VAR. I think it's pretty easy for me to say that seldom in my 23 years of working for realtors have I had more complaints than we fielded over the last couple of years regarding the operation of owners' associations and on some occasions their management companies regarding fees that were charged and procedures that were enacted and the incorrect reading of the law, imposition of rules that had no basis in the law. Now, this prompted us to undertake broad discussions with the industry, industry representatives, about our concerns, and it led to broad-reaching legislation.
So they're claiming to have been responsible for getting this. I think the managers are reacting to what happened with Koger. CAI is reacting to what happened to Koger. And I think the three of them all are in bed, and they took Terry Suit in with them just for good measure.
Somebody realized that unless something happened, the goose that laid the golden egg for the realtors, for the property managers, for the law firms, for the trade association, was going to get skewered by homeowners wielding pitchforks. But let's start with for whom the Virginia Association of Realtors speaks. They speak for the realtors, which are a trade association unto themselves. They don't speak for homeowners.
Right.
And to say that, well, you know, everything's going to be better now for the homeowners just because we realtors stepped in, I'm not so sure that's true at all. Things may be better for the realtors, but that remains to be seen. And the realtors were of absolutely zero help to the homeowners in Richmond when we tried to get some much-needed modifications to this bill.
No, because they wrote it. Chip Dix, and we'll hear about him later on, but he was, you know, he was one of the attorneys representing the realtors. You had Jack Rest representing the community managers. You had Pietrigiani representing CAI. The three of them, like I said, hopped into bed together and took Terry Suit along, and she just did whatever they wanted, you know. She pushed the bill through. She had absolutely zero concern about the people she supposedly represents. Right? Is that
right.
Your assessment?
That is my assessment.
That is your assessment as well. Because there are a lot of things in this bill that we're going to run it, that we're going to be talking about, that are pretty bad, Frank.
Yeah. Well, we start with what the stated purpose of the bill is by its own terms, and this is 54.1.2253.J of the bill. The purpose of this chapter is to protect the interest of associations adversely affected by common interest community managers who have breached their fiduciary duty. The provisions of this chapter shall be liberally administered in order to protect those interests and thereby the public's interest in the quality of management services provided by Virginia common interest community managers. That's the purpose of the bill, to protect associations, by the way, not homeowners, to protect associations from community managers who have breached their fiduciary duty. And if the bill stopped with doing that, it would still be a bad bill for a lot of reasons because of the way it does it, but it wouldn't be as bad as it is.
There's no way that this panel is going to prevent that from happening because the way the bill is written, there's nothing to stop a management company that is bad from being on this panel. Is there, Frank?
No, there's not. The governor picks who the governor is going to pick. And the powers that were given to this panel, in many respects, have absolutely nothing to do with the stated purpose of the bill.
Do you want to hear about who's on the panel, or?
Sure. Why don't we go through that, and so that the listeners can find out. You know, just check off your trade association du jour as you listen to who's on this panel here.
Because, I mean, we can tell you and talk about it. This is a comprehensive, huge bill. It's about 100 pages long. It's dry as a bone to read. But, you know, we've got an attorney who's speaking for the bill, but we're going to use his words to sort of underscore what we're talking about.
11 members. It's kind of an interesting makeup. There will be three members will be CIC managers, licensed managers. Two will be developers of common interest communities. One, a CPA who does work for CICs, an attorney who does work for common interest communities, a timeshare representative, and three citizens, two of whom must live in an association, and one be a current or past member of the board of an association.
So that's who has to be on the panel, Frank.
Yeah.
And how much do you think they're going to be worried about the individual homeowners?
Well, even if they put you and me as the two people on this panel who are required to live in associations, there'd be nine others, and the nine others are all you can bet tied in some manner, shape, or form with CAI.
Well, one of them has got to be a board member. What I have found typically is board members tend to be very defensive because they always feel like they're being singled out. And they're put in a position where they're going to be told what to say, what to do by the managers and by the attorneys because these are the people they look to for support and advice.
Yeah, we've seen that again and again, where you have the property manager trying to lecture the board on things like withholding information from homeowners that the homeowners statutorily have a pretty clear right to have, and the management company just doesn't want that word getting out because there would be egg on the management company's face.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we've seen that. You don't need to make this available. Let's hide this.
Yes.
And even though the law does not allow for them to withhold that information, that is pretty bad.
Yep.
What else is in there, Frank?
Well, when we talk about the power of the board, again, remember that the purpose of this statute is supposed to provide a remedy against managers, but the powers of the board are to adopt, amend, repeal rules and regulations and issue orders consistent with and in furtherance the objectives of this chapter. That's pretty broad. If it appears that any person, not any community manager, any person,
right,
has engaged, is engaging, or is about to engage in any act or practice in violation of this chapter, or any of the board's regulations or orders, the board, without prior administrative proceedings, may bring suit in an appropriate court to enjoin that act or practice or for other appropriate relief. The board is not required to post a bond or to prove that no adequate remedy at law exists. Now, what does this empower this board to do? This empowers this board to bring an action against a homeowner, not a property manager, because the statute says any person,
right.
So if the if this new board believes that any person has violated any of its rules and regulations, why then that the board can institute an action in court against that homeowner, and that's going to have what the law calls a chilling effect on the exercise of rights by homeowners. It's got nothing whatsoever to do with the stated purpose of the chapter being to protect associations against managers. If that was the intent, then this provision of the statute would say if it appears that any common interest community manager instead of any person. So we found that kind of irritating, and when we pointed that out to the legislature, they did absolutely nothing about it. The board may also intervene in any action or suit involving a violation by a declarant or a developer of a timeshare of this chapter. Now, that doesn't say whose side they have to intervene on, Shu. They could intervene on the side of the developer,
that's right,
or the declarant.
Right.
They could intervene on the side of the association, driving up the costs of litigation for the homeowner who's,
right,
trying to get this thing fixed.
Right.
Again, if the purpose of the chapter was to protect against rogue managers, this language would not read as it reads.
And again, we did point that out. And I don't know why. And the House committee, I thought, was really hostile. The Senate committee, I thought we had some friends on the Senate committee. But the House committee looked at us like we were just the enemy incarnate.
Well, you know, Terry Suit was sitting there right in the room with the House committee, and I think they'd all been pre-briefed as our own delegate up here told us. He had been very, very heavily lobbied on the side of the associations. But he voted our way because he's an attorney himself. In fact, he ran against the drafter of this bill, Jack Rust, and basically defeated Rust in an election for that seat in the Senate. But he looks
Senator
at this.
Senator of the House.
He's a senator.
Yeah.
And he defeated the good Jack Rust for that seat. The bill goes on to provide that this Common Interest Community Board may issue a cease and desist order. And it doesn't say against whom they may issue such a cease and desist order. They may also assess a monetary penalty. And it doesn't say against whom they may assess a monetary penalty. There's no limitation to issuing assessing a monetary penalty to somebody they believe is a rogue community manager. So there's no protection against their assessing a monetary penalty against what the statute says, any person who violates any provision of this section. And the section is the entire Property Owners Association Act. So, once again, we have powers that bear no relationship whatsoever to the stated purpose of the bill, and that's going to have to be fought on a case-by-case basis when they try to assess these penalties.
Why is it that they always feel that there's this great need to fine people, Frank? I mean, they're always out for your last dollar, aren't they?
Well, they will fine you if they think that they couldn't get money damages in court, or they will fine you if they think that they couldn't win in court, and they'll fine you to throw the burden onto you to bring a suit back against them and bear the burden of proving your case against them.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and with me today is Frank Short. Frank, thank you so much for being here on this special edition of On the Commons as we start our ninth year talking about HOAs and property rights and all that other wonderful stuff that seems to give a lot of people a lot of trouble across the country. And, of course, we hear about them quite a bit, hear from them quite a bit.
We do.
This bill is so huge, Frank. It is so huge. It goes into all kinds of different areas. It talks about prohibiting, banning transfer fees, and yet then it turns around and gives managers the authority to collect post-closing fees.
Well, as we pointed out in Richmond when we read them that provision of the chapter, a management fee by any other name, or transfer fee, I'm sorry, by any other name, is still a transfer fee. So although you might decide to call it a post-closing fee, you have, in effect, given these management companies exactly what they're trying to get now. Every time a house turns over,
right,
they get paid. And the thing is, in our association and in every other association in the Commonwealth of Virginia, when the board of directors of that association sits down to negotiate the contract with the management company, one of the things that the management company already gets paid to do is to maintain and keep current the books and records of the association. And that includes when homeowner A sells his house to the new homeowner B and homeowner B moves in, the management company is already being paid
to update the books and records reflecting that this house is now owned by homeowner B. That's already being paid for, and what management companies want is a way to get paid more money and to make the homeowner, not the board, because now they can show, look, board, you know, you don't have to, you don't have to pay us as much money. How many management company contracts, Sue, do you think are going to go down in price because of this?
I suspect, well, right now, I mean, a lot of them are going down.
No, I mean, how many management companies do you think they will reduce the amount they're charging the association?
Oh, the association, none whatsoever. None. They'll just keep adding to it because these guys seem to think they're grossly underpaid. And they're looking for ways of collecting more money. Frank, you know, I hear from so many people, and I'm always surprised because these management companies have different ways of taking money from individual homeowners, and the homeowners are terrified. You know, $50 here, $25 there, $150 over here. These guys are making oodles and oodles and oodles of money, and I wonder sometimes if the IRS wouldn't be interested in finding out exactly how much money these guys are making.
Yeah, well,
you know, because none of this is sanctioned by the association. None of this is allowed by law. None of this is normal. I mean, none of this is what the, you know, what they're supposed to be doing. But these guys are just horrible.
And the other thing is that the way that they secure payment for these fees is through non-judicial foreclosure. If the management company does not get paid, the $50 post-closing fee, i.e. the transfer fee by another name, what they do is they file a lien against the property, and instead of going into a small claims court and proving that they, in fact, did have a right to this fee, they can sell that home on the courthouse steps by auction, and they can do it without ever going before a judge in a court of competent jurisdiction.
So they're charging
$50.
So they're charging, yeah. And now they can charge that legitimately. Thank you, Terry Suit.
Thank you, Terry Suit.
Thank you very much, Terry Suit.
You and your $7,000 from the Association of Virginia Association of Community Managers.
And plus, God knows, I mean, there's so many individual names there, Frank, that you don't know who they are. I mean, I could find someone off the street and say, here, would you please give this money to Terry Suit? And then it doesn't look like it's coming from me, but someone else gets someone, you know, there's a total stranger that's donating or contributing to her fund. And you have to wonder where that's coming from. But anyway, that's
Something else we should tell the folks about these fees, Sue. All of the fees that are authorized by this bill, and there's a whole load of them, from an inspection fee of $100 to various charges for actually providing the disclosure packet that could be $150 or $125 to another $50 for an expeditious delivery of the fee and a $25 if you want a hard copy of the fee. All of these things apply only in associations that are managed by one of these newfangled
Management companies
with CAI credentials, you see.
And that money goes to the management company, right, Frank?
Well, I guess the statute doesn't expressly say that, but you can bet yourself that the management companies will be going to their boards of directors saying, what a deal we have for you. All you got to do is pay us all of these fees here, and we'll take care of all this for you. Well, the problem is they're probably taking care of it right now, and it's being paid for from the general fee paid to the management company. So they will be getting paid an additional source of revenue from the homeowner, from the individual buyer or seller, not from the general revenues of the associations. for doing this?
If you buy a house and you get a mortgage and you don't pay, make your mortgage payments, the banks have an interest in the house because it's their money that's tied up in the house. I can understand, I don't like foreclosures at all, but I can understand them being able to foreclose. Okay? Usually they'll work with you. An association, I don't think an association should have the power to foreclose. But again, there's a legitimate, in some cases, a legitimate concern that somebody who lives in an association is maybe getting benefits, especially in a condominium where their utilities may be paid for. It may include all kinds of things. And even in an association like ours where the streets and trash and you know, these are services that we all use. There's a reason, there's a legitimate reason to be able to give associations the power to go after a homeowner to collect these fees. They're legitimate fees. I'm not going to argue with that. I think foreclosure is too harsh. But why on God's green earth are we giving managers the right, the power to foreclose to collect $50 just to type their names in the computer, Frank? This is outrageous. It's absolutely outrageous.
Statute doesn't give that right to managers. That's an association right. The association would be the one to foreclose, not the management company. But the association would be doing it to collect this $50.
For the
management company.
So they're being given the power to foreclose to collect a $50 transfer fee. And the $50 goes to the management company.
Yep.
And you can lose your home for that.
Yes.
And they don't want, and here's something else that we're going to talk about. If you go to the management company or you order a packet or you do whatever, you get your, you pay for it. You know exactly what you're paying for. This law says that you're not to pay for anything up front. They want it collected at settlement.
Yes.
And the reason for that is? So they can hide all kinds of things in settlement, right? It's a lot harder when you're sitting there for an hour going through, you know, you're going to pay three days worth of insurance here and we're going to prorate all of this. You've got all this money that's going from one column into the other column.
Well, when we found our former management company, Cogra Management, which is now in bankruptcy, trying to collect transfer fees in our association that had not been approved by the board of directors, were not authorized by our governing documents, and were not provided for in the contract we had with Cogra Management. Cogra was trying to collect it right from the seller or right from the buyer. The board knew nothing about it until one night at a board meeting, some homeowner came up and asked about this transfer fee. And the board members started looking at one another and saying, "What?
What transfer fee?
And this was something that Cogra was trying to hide at the settlement table. And by the time the smoke cleared, we made Cogra refund over $6,000 to homeowners. That's less than Terry Suit got from the Virginia Association of Community Managers, but it's still, you know, nothing to sneeze at. They had to refund all that money to the homeowners. But, you know, one of the reasons that nobody leaped right out and brought this to the board's attention was exactly what you just said, Shu. You're at the closing table. $50 appears to be budget dust. But, you know, 50 here, 50 there from, you know, 1,000 homeowners, 1,300 homeowners just in our association. Look at how many associations this company manages. And you're talking, in the words of Harry Truman, real money.
Well, they managed 400, some bigger, some smaller than us. And you look at the number of transfer fees. But it wasn't just transfer fees, as I'm beginning to find out, Frank. I'm hearing from people, and they have pulled all kinds of stunts, all kinds of, they've fleeced homeowners, especially in lower income, first-time buyers who are not sophisticated, who don't know what they're doing, and who don't know, you know, they're scared to death. They've just put a ton of money into buying a house, and they're feeling a little uncomfortable about it, and all of a sudden they're being told that they owe, you know, X number of dollars for this, that, and the other, and that if they don't pay it, they're going to be, you know, they're going to file a lien against them. people pay it. They roll over and they pay it. And it's more than just a transfer fee, I can assure you.
Well, you're a new homeowner. You don't want to rock the boat. You don't want to make waves. You want to try to get along with the new neighbors. And when they tell you that they've got the authority to do something, you take it at face value, and you don't come in with the presumption that they're trying to hit you up for a phony fee, which is exactly what Cogra Management was doing.
So, Paul, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think this new panel is going to go after Cogra or the companies like Cogra for doing this sort of thing?
I don't think there's much of Cogra left to go after. The bankruptcy judge ordered the assets sold. Another company has bought those assets, and so... They'll be buzzards circling around the carcass of what's left over from Cogra Management. But
they're not the only ones out there.
Oh, they're not the only ones. They're just the most famous ones, and
they're the ones that got caught.
Exactly.
They're the ones that got caught and got all the media hype. But,
yes.
You know, every man. I bet you almost every management company out there has got some kind of skeleton in their closet. They're doing something that's not 100% kosher.
Well, you know, the problem is, Sue, that the overwhelming majority of them are affiliated with CAI. And CAI has led the charge year after year saying that there's no broad-based problem here. There's only a series of isolated incidents. There's just one or two disgruntled homeowners in these places. And it's the same people who continually complain. Well, you know, the Virginia Association of Realtors just put the lie to that, whether they intended to or not, with how broad-based the complaints are. But the solution to the problem is apparently to turn the hen house over to the very foxes about whom we've been hearing all these complaints, because the Common Interest Community Board is absolutely dominated by the Trade Association. And that's what's wrong with this picture.
You know, Tom Skiba is CEO of CAI, and he has a blog. And in his blog, he talks about this, and he talks about raising the bar in Virginia now. He has repeatedly said there are no problems. You know, you get these people, they're well-trained. Make sure they're CAI-affiliated. Make sure they're credentialed, da-da-da-da.
For those of you who want to know about CAI and its credentials, do me a favor. Do a Google search with Community Association Institute in quotes and Federal Trade Commission in quotes, and you'll find how the Federal Trade Commission schwacked CAI over deep left center about their so-called their ethical code, the CAI Code of Ethics, which was nothing more than a ruse to restrain free trade. And that ain't Frank Short telling you that. That's the Federal Trade Commission.
Yeah. Well, here's what from this is from Tom Skiba's blog. He says, also critical, and he's writing about this new law, also critical is the fact that by statute, persons holding a CAI or NBC CAM certification will be considered to have met the individual certification requirements, and companies holding an AAMC will have met the qualifications for corporate licensure.
Yeah, in other words, if you hold CAI credentials,
you're in. You're in.
And if you don't,
you gotta get
send
them.
Us your money, join CAI, come to our toga party, we'll give you the credentials, and then you'll be in. And we've achieved, you know, there was somebody years ago did a study on the initial aims of the Japanese as they entered World War II, and found out that the government of Japan has long since realized every single objective they had in going into World War II. So CAI got schwacked by the Federal Trade Commission for restraint of free trade, and here they've basically given themselves a statutorily authorized monopoly on the licensure of folks with their credentials. And by the way, to hold their credentials
boys and girls, you have to be a dues-paying member of CAI. So they've expanded their membership base, they've expanded their financials, and they've expanded their political power in one fell swoop with the complicity of the Virginia legislature. Thanks a lot again, Terry Suit.
Yes.
For $7,000, I'm not sure you got your money's worth.
Is that the same as a two-bit these days?
Yeah.
It's about the equivalent of a two-bit. Okay. He goes on to say, in adopting the CAI-NBC CAM family or certifications and designations, the legislature has deferred to the experts on management, including the many CAI volunteers who've worked to develop these programs over the years. Oh, gosh. Haven't they worked really very hard? Frank, basically what this has done is made sure that anybody who might be a very capable manager has to belong to CAI.
He has to belong to CAI, and he better not rock the CAI boat, and he better toe the CAI party line, or he could lose his credentials and he could lose his livelihood in Virginia.
I have heard from a lot of people who don't live in Virginia, and they say, good, congratulations, this is a wonderful law. There's provisions for penalties. You've got to license managers. This is a great first step. Here you and I are saying this stinks big time, and it's absolutely no good. For those of you who are out there who think that this might be a great model piece of legislation, please think again. There is nothing in this for you, the homeowners. There are absolutely no protections in this 100-page bit of nonsense that would even remotely protect the interests of the homeowners. So you don't want it.
What Shu and I suggested in Richmond was that they take this bill and find all the provisions of the bill that applied only to regulating community managers and give those powers to this common interest community board. We didn't like that, but that would at least have been something we could have held our nose and swallowed. The other powers should have been given to somebody with absolutely no CAI affiliation, somebody whose entire statutory portfolio was consumer protection of the homeowners. And that does not belong to a board with a membership like this board. And we suggested that, well, you know, why don't you look at the State Corporation Commission? Why don't you look at the Attorney General's office and set up a body in that office, independent of the industry, with the sole portfolio of protecting the rights of homeowners. And the legislatures looked at us like we had two heads.
Yeah, I don't know what we're going to do about this, Frank. Are we going to do anything, or are we just going to let this just build up? Because it's like an overdecked Christmas tree. At some point, it's going to topple.
Well, we actually heard the good Chip Dix from the Virginia Association of Realtors. He came up to us after we had made our presentation to the legislature, and he said, well, you know, guys, this has got to happen in small steps. You know, what you're talking about has got to happen in small steps. Well, we took several small steps here, and several of them are in the wrong direction. We're going to have to fix this thing and fix it repeatedly and change the composition of this panel and change the composition of the Virginia Housing Commission and the Common Interest Community Study Group to get the special interests to play a much less significant role in what happens with regard to the rights of the homeowners who live in these associations. And I'm not sure how you do that very quickly, other than by things like this where we try to call attention to who's doing what in Richmond, who's getting paid, who's working to support whose agenda. And sooner or later, folks like Senator Chet Peterson, who voted against this bill, will get listened to by other people.
Yeah, he's brand new, and so, you know, I hope I hope that you know, we can count on him to maybe introduce something to take this back. But Frank, you know, every time the homeowners have got something they thought was going to protect them, along came the industry and tweaked it and made it a little bit more industry friendly and less and more onerous, basically, for the homeowners. So it's been kind of like a ping pong game, and I've been watching this for the last 20 years, back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah, it's a bait and switch. You know, they'll hold up something that says, look, you know, we're giving you these protections, we're putting an ombudsman down in Richmond. Well, the ombudsman's got no power whatsoever. The ombudsman can't issue a binding opinion, a binding order for anybody to do anything. The that power belongs to this Common Interest Community Board and not the ombudsman.
You know, we've been watching the ombudsman's office. The first one was out of Nevada. The idea was good. It was, you know, it was an idea that maybe would have worked. The first ombudswoman was Mary Lynn Ashworth, and she did a relatively good job, but the intention was never to have her, you know, to have her succeed. The intention was always to just act as a placebo. When she did a good job, they pulled her out, and they've just gone through one iteration of the oversight after another. You had the same, you saw the same thing happen down in Florida, where they had a good ombudsman in Virgil Rizzo. But because he was so good, the industry whined and complained, and so the governor fired him and replaced him with someone who's not as consumer-friendly or doesn't appear to be as proactive in protecting the rights of the homeowners as Virgil did. And now in Virginia, by statute, our ombudsman has got to be an industry attorney, right?
He's got to be a member of the Virginia Bar, but unlike the attorney who's on the Common Interest Community Board, I don't believe that the ombudsman has got to be a somebody who practices community association law. If it had required that, you could all but guarantee he'd be a dues-paying member of CAI.
So what's the industry saying about this bill? Anything interesting out there?
Well, we can play some more clips from the Virginia Association of Realtors. I've also got a newsletter put out by a CAI-affiliated law firm in Virginia here called Reese Broom and Diaz. I guess they're called Reese Broom PC these days. They used to be Reese Broom and Diaz.
Oh, what happened to Diaz?
I don't know.
Somebody kick Ray Diaz out?
You got me. But now their letterhead is Reese Broom PC on their newsletter. Right. Well, why don't we play another Virginia Association of Realtors clip, because some of those were pretty good.
Well, we can talk about one of the things, you know, Frank, the idea at some point initially when they first came up with the bill, it was known as the disclosure bill. The poll was known as the disclosure bill. And the idea was to provide buyers with, you know, with information about the association so that they could back out if they decided they didn't really want to buy into it. And that package was to have cost somewhere in the neighborhood, it actually $50 when it was first designed. Now they've gone to the menu item, and here's, let me see if I can find this next clip. Here's what they're going to be paying for the package.
Charges may not be made of the listing agent at the time the packet is ordered. These charges are all payable at the time of closing and not before. So listing agents, you don't need to take out your checkbook. or get the money from your seller up front, it can all be taken out at the closing table.
One of the things, Frank, they also had a Q&A session at the end, but at one point the attorney who was doing this was talking about, and there's some little clips here that I kind of liked. And this is one that the attorney made.
I'm afraid it's a fact of life that in some situations, in some instances, these associations can become many fiefdoms, sometimes governed by people who seem to have not quite enough to do.
That's his comment on what associations really are. And then he talks about a little bit about the efficiency of the management companies.
If you request a property owners association packet in writing and don't receive it within 14 days, what do you do? Well, there's a new twist on this. In fact, I would ask it this way: if you request it within 14 days and you request it and you get it within 14 days, where do you throw the party? That's a little bit harsh.
Now that one, when I heard that little comment, that cracked me up, because I think that pretty much sums it up, Frank. Management companies, credentialed or not, seem to be inefficient, incompetent, incapable of doing the job.
Yes, and now they'll tell you, well, if you don't like what we're doing, you can go ahead and file a complaint with the folks down in Richmond who represent our trade association. And just tell them that you don't think that we're getting you what you're supposed to get in a timely manner, and best of luck to you. I'm not sure that's a real improvement of what they've been telling folks up to this point, which is, if you don't like it, go find a lawyer and sue us.
Sue us or move. I mean, that's another famous one.
Yeah.
If you don't like it here, then just why don't you move? Frank, the law went into effect July 1. But for all practical purposes, there's not a whole hell of a lot they can do with it right now. There's no panel in place. There's no nothing in place, is there?
No, there's not yet. I think what you heard from the governor's office was that he's going to put out a press release by the end of July announcing who he has selected to be on the panel. But to go back to your point about remedies and what the real effect of this is going to be, let me go back to the Reese Broom and Diaz or Reese Broom newsletter. This is their May 2008 newsletter from page 9. We hope we're wrong, but we expect that this procedure will result in a lot more complaints against community associations in general, as it eliminates the burden of cost that litigation requires of a litigant.
Huh?
Really? In other words, that must be a good thing, Reese Broom, that that because of the high cost of litigation, we don't get as many complaints. The newsletter goes on to say, it is too soon to tell whether the CIC board, that's a common interest community board, will be a paper tiger or a quasi-court. So it is too soon to tell, Shu, but I'm not encouraged any more than Reese Broom and Diaz is encouraged. Maybe if both of us are discouraged, maybe that's actually good for a homeowner, but I'm not so sure.
I don't think so somehow. You know, they always have a way of gaining, manipulating these things. And look, Frank, they're the professionals. The homeowners are just the consumers. They're not going to get involved in, and they can't get involved in the nitty-gritty of stuff any more than they can get in there and tell GM how to build a car. I mean, that's not our job.
No, but when we're in an association that says, for example, you've got a right to see books and records of an association, and I walk in and ask for the last quarter's financial reports, and I don't get it, and when I don't get it within the statutorily required 5 days, and they just smile at me, something's wrong with this picture. And this is going on in companies that for years and years and years have carried these so-called prestigious CAI credentials.
That goes on all the time, Frank, as you well know. Well, we'll have to just wait and see what happens. I don't like the bill. I don't have high hopes for it. I'd like to think that I'm going to be surprised, but I know that if I am surprised, it's not going to be the way I would like to be surprised.
No.
And for all of you out there, they started in Virginia, but hang on to your hats, because you know they're going to be bringing it to a state near you real soon. Don't envy us. Fight it. Fight it like mad, right, Frank?
Fight it like mad, and just understand what you're going to be up against, because they've got a lot more money. They're a lot better organized than the homeowners. The good news is that the industry appears to have realized that something had to happen, and they fell onto this as something that would protect their interest. And when it becomes clear, as I think it will become clear, that this doesn't work, then maybe, just maybe, at the next stage of this, we will get some effective teeth in the law and some effective consumer protection for the folks who have to live in these associations.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Always
Frank.
Fun, Drew. Happy 4th of July and happy birthday for the show and for you.
Thank you. And
we'll watch this and talk about it again in the future.
Thank you for joining us today. Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. That's onthecommons, all one word, .us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. Thanks again for joining us, and see you all next week.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to justice for HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell
Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.